The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Thursday. It's the post All-Ireland Thursday football show. We haven't had one of these before. So we're going to talk to Jarla Burns on the show today, and obviously this debate comes up every year. So we're in post All-Ireland Dublin win. It's been 4 years in a row, so obviously fingers are pointed at, and unfortunately they're being pointed at, the finances and the leg up Dublin were given by the government, by the GAA, and by the Sports Council. And it's unfortunate that this is kind of mentioned in the week after Dublin won the All-Ireland, because it's very unfortunate on the panel of players who are all outstanding, the commitment levels, all those things.
They're a really good team, let's clarify that.
The fitness levels that they show, all these things, the dedication, the likability, the brilliance. It's unfortunate for them, like Dennis Bastic said, they don't like to hear this. So let's try and separate that brilliance away from this other conversation that absolutely needs to be had.
Yeah, I agree.
And have I been sensitive enough now to the Dublin fans there
that we can carry on with the discussion? Yeah, no, you're right. And like the fact that Stephen Cluxton did mention it, as you mentioned on Monday, in his speech, his All-Ireland speech, then it shows that it is on their minds, and it would be really annoying for them. But it is a big issue, and it's something that every other county in Ireland are looking at. And if I was Dublin, I would want this conversation to be had, because you know, Dublin are the second most successful football team anyway, you know, before all that money got ploughed in for whatever other reasons. But you know, so they would have had success. This team would have had success, I do believe that, without this money. So if I was them, I would want this sort of issue talked about and sorted out to try and even it up again.
It absolutely helps. So we're going to talk to Jarla. Jarla's going to defend the GAA's position on why this came about. Like, Dublin have 90 games development officers. The rest of Leinster have 89. Do you know what I mean? Dublin's commercial revenue is about 1.5 million. Like, I mean, they fundraised 55,000. That's all. Mayo have matched them last year in commercial revenue, but they fundraised 900,000, a million of it.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, that nobody can generate. So they're already generating way more to sustain themselves. And on top of that, the government gave them a 5 million loan, and the government's given them way more in games development than any other county. Like, I mean, it just doesn't add. The figures don't add up, and it's not fair. The Leinster Championship is a joke. It's 13 out of 14 now. 6 of 8 All-Irelands. And like, while obviously you have to separate these conversations, this started in 2002, 2003, 2004. These conversations were being had, and now look at them, you know, a generation later. Like, I mean, it's hard not to say that this had a huge effect on how strong Dublin are.
No, absolutely. Like, it was identified at the time that like the GAA was possibly struggling a bit in Dublin, and something needed to be done, especially to safeguard it against like the interests of other sports like rugby and soccer, etc. But I don't think the GAA would have realised that Dublin would have maximised their resources to the level that they actually have. I mean, you have to give credit to the Dublin for the way they run their operation so professionally. But like, it's becoming a thing now that there's nearly a disclaimer about Dublin's All-Ireland, which is unfair because of this argument about funding that keeps coming up. And I thought it was more prevalent this year than any year. And then I went looking for it today, and like exactly the same dates after the All-Ireland final last year. It went on for the week. Like, it's only been because
we
it's
went
a year.
On, we went on holidays after the Monday last year.
Yeah, I missed our debate. That was why. But it's something every year. And it's a pity because it's taken attention away from what is an unbelievable group of players.
That's the thing. So Jack McCaffrey, as usual, has been great after the All-Ireland final. I think he was sitting around in the Gibson Hotel with a group of journalists around him enjoying a pint of Guinness the next morning. And there's lots of quotes of his around. So he's saying there's so many arguments out there about Dublin football, the stuff we've done, but I would challenge anyone to take a look at our group and have a cut off us. See, again, I don't like, nobody's having a cut off this team. It's in brilliant, it's marvellous, it's outstanding quality. This is another issue. It's a GAA issue first and foremost, and why one county was identified over all the other counties, why it's continuing. Why, like, okay, so last year they received 165,000 less in games development than they did the previous year. It's still 1.2 something million, way above anybody else. So they're trying to now continuously phase this money down, because they don't need this games development money. They're getting 1.5 million in sponsorship every year. They have all these different partners. They're growing that year on year with a marketing department. They're self-sufficient. They don't need this GAA money, but they're still getting it. The Leinster Council was giving them 241,000 in games, in coaching money. Leinster Council, on top of all this money, now they're only phasing that out and they're starting to give this to the Meads and Kildares and everything. But it's too late. It's going to take 20 years for the Leinster counties. And that, like, I mean, I think of Laois. Like, the Laois County, or football in Laois, is on its knees. Port Laois have won 12 of the last 13 county titles. Nobody's landing a glove on them. It's a domination. There's clubs in Laois absolutely struggling. Why is there not a strategic plan drawn up by the GAA, the governing body? No, this is always, well, that's Laois's problem. It's up to every other county to step up to Dublin's mark. But Dublin got a helping hand by the governing body.
Yeah.
Where's the help from the governing body and targeting Laois Championship, where Laois are a great traditional, or Port Laois are a great traditional club, and no one's even challenging them to come into Leinster and have no chance? I don't know why Laois aren't. Dublin were helped out because of their support base, and because, this is my opinion, because of their support base and because of their ability to generate millions.
But I think this is where it's very messy, and I think now what we're doing is sort of combining the two things again, like the team and the money. Where, like, it's very hard if you're in a GAA or government's shoes.
I don't know. I don't like to combine it to what the effort these teams and they won
that.
It fair and square, but it is linked to this quality that's coming through.
I mean, like, this wasn't targeted to say let's get Dublin a championship, and like the way you're saying help Laois out, it's not sort of trying to get Laois a championship and see them successful. It's just trying to get more players playing.
Yeah, but you see, this is the thing, right? And I will put, like, I mean, the participation numbers in Dublin is 2.91%. Right, in Munster it's 7.53, Ulster 7.76, and it's 8.16 in Connacht and 8.6 in the rest of Leinster. If Dublin are to come up to those percentages, sure, forget about it.
Yeah,
like that's partition.
Nearly forget about it at those percentages.
Forget about it. At the moment, they've way more playing numbers than everybody else. If you bring up the percentage of the population that's playing, sure, we're all doomed. And then listen, it's all over. Forget about it.
I agree. Like, and that's, I mean, that is the
so
massive
why are
problem.
They but why are they targeting that?
Because, like, they want the GAA to be the biggest sport in Ireland. You know, like, with no doubts, they want everybody in Ireland playing GAA, and then that is going to be a
everyone in Dublin, as far as I can see.
Yeah, but like, but that's where, like, the more the years go on, the more people are flocking to Dublin and Belfast. You know, people are coming to the cities they live, and that is where all the population is. So they need to sort of go in there. It's not saying forget about those little clubs. It's saying, right, there's a batch of players there that aren't playing.
Yeah.
They could go play rugby, they could go play soccer, whatever. Like, so let's go target them. And now this is the problem.
I know, I take that. And, like, everybody wants, in a way, if you follow this through to its natural conclusion, Dublin fans won't like to hear this. So it's 2.91% playing numbers in Dublin. If you're going to bring that up to Ulster, Munster, Leinster, Dublin will have the playing numbers of a province. They'll have the commercial income of a province. They'll have the games development officers of a province. They will have the GAA funding of a province. In fact, Andy Kettle, in 2011, when they published a strategic plan from 2011 to 2017, he said, right now we have 20% of the country's population in Dublin County Board area, so it doesn't make sense that we should be considered 1/32nd of the country rather than what. So it does make sense we should. It doesn't make sense we should be considered 1/32nd of the country rather than 1/5th. So he was quoted at saying at the launch of this, right? So they wanted to be seen as a province. They wanted the status of a province.
Was that for the financial revenue that they
this
wanted?
This was the financial. So they were making this argument to get provincial revenues or provincial games development, which they have. So if you follow all this through, you're getting the player numbers up, which there are all these games development officers, that's their remit, right? Then they have the revenue, they have the commercial, they have all that. They've only one team, right? So no matter what Dublin fans, this is facts. Like, this is, in my opinion, these are all facts. So in Leinster, there's 12 teams, Kilkenny, 11, right? Football teams. Dublin have one. Now, everything else will be equal moving forward. As the Dublin population expands, these games developments are going to increase that playing percentage. So Dublin have one team. The rest of Leinster have the same resources and numbers, and they've got 11.
Mm-hmm.
Ulster has, what, 9? Like, give me a break. Like, I mean, and these Dublin are resisting breaking Dublin into two. It should be split into at least 4, north, south, east and west. Based on these numbers, which are facts.
Provided by the Dublin chairman himself.
Provided, and what they wanted to be recognised at. So they want one team to be recognised in the same way as 11 Leinster teams. Sure, can never. Leinster football is dead if this continues like this.
Yeah, and but I do think this raises an even bigger issue, because you talked before about Portlaoise and how you've had no problem splitting that. Like, does that
it's
mean...
It's not that I wouldn't have a problem now. I would have a problem because there's no natural...
You can see what they're talking about.
I can see why other clubs think it's unfair that Portlaoise are... Like, for example, Kildare have two big... Kildare Town or Newbridge Town would have Sarsfields and Moorfield. Carlow would have a couple of big clubs. Like, most big... Tullamore, most big towns have two big clubs. Portlaoise has one. Now that's unfair based on the population we have, but there's no clear divide in Portlaoise. It is difficult, and Portlaoise tried a second club. It's not like it wasn't tried and nobody wanted to go to it, because there was no real defined where it is. It was just anybody wants to go to this other club, go to it. And sure, no, like, you know what I mean? It was against the Portlaoise juggernaut. There's a natural divide in Dublin, north, south, east, west, really. Like, especially north and south.
I do, like, especially like when you have Fingal and you have South Dublin as sort of separate councils.
It's split into councils,
But I do, again, this is probably was always going to happen when we started all this in 2002 and 3, but you start just getting messy. Like, even clubs in Dublin, like in St. Anne's compared to Ballyboden, like, there's such a disparity there, and taken to its natural conclusion then, do Leitrim keep complaining until everyone... has a county the size of theirs? Like, you know, why do Leitrim have to compete against Mayo, for example, because they've got a bigger population? So again, it's just going to cause so many problems. Like,
I don't think the disparity is that big anywhere else, though. Do you know what I mean?
Like, if you look at Mayo funding, you look Leitrim funding, there won't be a huge disparity. You know what I mean? There will be in playing numbers. There's nothing you can do about
that. Population-wise as well. The disparity isn't as big, but I get what you're saying.
The commercial funding, though, that you mentioned, that is the first point of call. I think that's the most unfair. Like Leitrim can't attract AIG, and that is no fault of their own. No matter what they do, even if they won an All-Ireland, AIG won't come to them. It makes more sense to go to Dublin. So that's like that should be centralised. Somebody should be looking after that.
No, and I agree with that, and I would be more sympathetic towards Dublin on that, right? So AIG giving them all that money, they want that association. Dublin, there are natural advantages Dublin have that just can't be argued with, and that's the reality of it. But the money from the GAA, that absolutely can be argued with. Yeah. You know what I mean? And if that continues on, then maybe it should be split. I would agree. I don't know. I'm less... Dublin always had more sponsorship money than the rest. They're lucky. They have a bigger population and they can attract bigger...
Yeah, but
I never had a problem necessarily with what they can earn from that.
I would think that's a bigger issue. Like, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have AIG. That makes way more sense for AIG to sponsor Dublin. But I think that money should just be pooled and just divided out equally to every county, because...
Well, where would Dublin's motivation then be to maximise that if
somebody else would be looking after that. Somebody else would be looking after...
Centralised.
We're trying to get Leitrim the best deal, and we're trying to get Dublin the best deal, which makes more sense for the commercial partners. And
my take is just let Dublin have their commercial money. Let them have that.
But don't give them the money from the GAA. They get no
games development money because they don't need it.
Yeah.
Leitrim needs it. Let's pump it into them because they're getting no sponsorship money, and make that split fairer. That's what's fair to me. And let Dublin earn all the money they want. Like, good on them. Well done. Fair play to you. But you're not getting any more money because you don't need it.
Dublin were able to spend over $500,000 on office salaries in 2016. This is part of the numbers that's coming up lately. And then there was another story that a small county, this is Ewan McKenna, who's been pushing this agenda fairly strong.
Has he?
A small county had an external audit done by Crow Park. What was told was they needed two full-time positions, needed hiring. They were told to apply for the money. It's not there. Do you know what I mean? So when Dublin can afford to spend that amount on their operation, and then when a small county like that can't even afford to hire one position full time because the money's just not available to them, and Dublin have got a greater percentage of the GAA revenue despite getting all their commercial income as well, it's
very skewed in their favour. There's no doubt about that. And Kevin McStay stepped down yesterday, so he released a statement, and he is kind of talking about this as well as one of the reasons. So he says in the statement is, success is what we all crave, but we must understand our reality too. While Roscommon is a proud football county, it's a small county with a limited playing pool and deficits in resources and facilities. The budget required to finance success at the highest level demands all year round attention. Facilities, catering, kit and equipment, professional expertise, and especially travel costs are major financial drainers, and they are placing a massive burden on voluntary officers that is often overwhelming. Like, that's very, very strong language there, isn't it? About the picture he's painting. Like, Dublin don't have those issues. That's the reality of it. They don't have those issues. They can get in all the expertise. While Kevin McStay, famously Jim McGuinness, was on the road trying to get, like, handouts from businesses, and Mayo can get money from America. Kerry go over doing banquets. And they're constantly trying and trying to get money in, volunteers, to get... And they never get anywhere near the level of what, you know, the Dublin commercial revenue can bring in. But that's the reality for managers, and that's a huge burden and a struggle that Kevin McStay had for 3 years.
And that's why I think it makes sense for them to have a chunk of AIG money and the drink partners and the motor partners and all this that Dublin are able to get in, because Roscommon can't, and Jim Gavin doesn't have to canvass for money around Dublin. It's coming in. Yeah. Kevin McStay is a football manager, and he has to spend probably most of his time not on the football field, and he's actually just driving around Roscommon and going to gigs and selling himself, basically just trying to get a bit more money in.
Yeah. So he says, he continued on, he says, these are significant challenges the smaller GAA counties face. If the GAA is committed to ensuring all counties are at a minimum competitive, then they must be supported financially in a way that reflects the demands and the need for fairness, equality and solidarity. So if you look at those figures for Mayo and Dublin, for example, in 2017, where they brought in the same amount of money, it was just massively different ways that they brought it in. Mayo were competing with Dublin. What is the one thing Mayo are able to compete with Dublin? Physically, physiologically, strength and conditioning. What they can stay with Dublin. Why is that? Expertise, finances. What do you need? You need the very best coaches. You need the very best strength and conditioning guys. These lads don't come cheap. Why are Mayo at a different physical level to Kerry, to Tyrone, and to all these others? Like, I don't know the absolute answers to this, but like, I mean, if people think that the money that you put into a senior team, it does not reflect in bear out in their performances and what type of team you tug out. Sure, you're living in cloud cuckoo land.
Just what you mentioned there about kind of Mayo and Dublin, in that they've had a consistent kind of strength and conditioning policy for the last, you know, 5 to 6 years, whereas, you know, you kind of have other counties coming in, you know, changing their S&C and stuff like that. But like, because as you said, they're able to commit the resources. Like, Dublin have had the best, Mayo have had Barry Solon, like doing stuff with Arsenal, but like kind of liaising with the Mayo strength and conditioning coach, and it shows. But it's because they're able to commit those resources to it. Like,
yeah, no, and that's absolutely it. And like, I mean, we'll talk about quickly about Offaly managerial application process in a little while, but one of their conditions in the application to be Offaly manager is that the Offaly County Board provide the strength and conditioning coach. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to decide your own. Like,
that was a big red flag.
That was a big red flag. I wouldn't be going in anywhere where I can't pick my own people. John Mahan obviously has. But just on Kevin McStay, because there was lots of rumours going around that players didn't want to commit next year. And like, he had some issues with that in his second year. And like, you know, he's in the job 3 years, and he hasn't had an easy time of it. Having said that, you look back over his tenure, 3 years, you have a Connacht title, you have an FBD, which I wouldn't really count too much. He reached the Super 8s and he leaves them in Division 1 where he found them. Now, in relegation and promotion, that's a successful year. Like, I mean, Roscommon fans are obviously very, very demanding, and that's because of underage success. But let's be realistic about where Roscommon are at. They're nowhere near that top five teams to ship beatings by them on a regular basis. Yeah.
And like, they're one of their best under 21 teams was 2014. They came up against Dublin and got crushed. Like, that Dublin team was unbelievable. But that does again show the level they're trying to get to. They have Dublin in their group in the Super 8s. Like, I think Roscommon have done amazingly. They drew with Mayo last year in the quarterfinals. So, kick of a ball, they get to a semi final. Won the league as well on the way back up this year. Kevin McStay's had a really good tenure, and I think it's a bad day for them, the fact that he's
been. Player unrest has been a bit of a consistent kind of. If you go back 2016, Kyle Craig, the Dailies, there was a couple of lads that left the panel, a couple came back. So, it's obviously not been playing sailing the whole way through. And
which
I know
is unusual, because he seems like such a level headed manager. Yeah. You wonder what. And Lee McHale is a kind of a likable fella as well. I know him personally.
Maybe the Fergal O'Donnell split as well that first year as well. And like, you know, Gay Sheeran and other Roscommon people didn't want a Mayo man in charge of their team as well. Yeah. I doubt that would have filtered down to the players, but it hasn't been playing sailing for the last 3 years. And like, I was like, no more than you. Like what did Roscommon expect to be left in Division One, to have won a Connacht title, to have definitely improved, to have made the Super 8s? Like, that to me is like nearly at the limit of what they should be expecting.
I think so. You know, when you talk about success, there was no All-Ireland underage success. They won a minor in 2006. Those players are now gone.
Yeah.
So like, what have they won since then? They've been win in provincials. If there's been no All-Irelands there, am I mistaken? They didn't ever win an under-21 All-Ireland. They got to a final, but they never won it. So, like, I mean, they have to understand, like, let's be realistic here, like, in fairness. Right, we're going to move on to this Carnacon stuff. And I'm getting a little bit annoyed about this, if I'm being honest, because I'm tired of it. I'm tired of this kind of cloak and dagger stuff and these vague kind of comments from Cora Staunton, pretty, like, the majority of them, because she seems to be their spokesperson. And didn't want to bring her on because she doesn't seem to be going to tell anybody anything. She was on Off the Ball yesterday, and now I don't know whether she got an easy ride. Conan, you were listening to this, but like, she's just repeating the same thing. She's not being drawn on what the problem is. So we're talking about player welfare issues. We're talking about what else was there that are very personal to players, and there's safety mentioned as well.
Yeah. Wasn't, like, a safe environment.
Wasn't a safe environment. Now, you have to step back and think about this. So this is a male manager and these are female players, and you're talking about unsafe player welfare and personal.
Unhealthy as well.
Unhealthy. Think about this. Like, I mean, this is slanderous if there's nothing behind this. And they won't come out, they won't say what they are. Right, so their teammates aren't standing by them. Now, they're saying their teammates weren't aware of this. But what kind of teammates can you not come and tell them what it was? And if these were serious enough, surely all your teammates who have your back over any bloody manager will say, well, these are serious issues and we're all sticking together and that manager's gone. That hasn't happened. So I don't like Cora's excuse that, oh, well, the others don't know what they are. Tell them what they are.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you tell them what they are? Like, I mean, are you a team? There's been a mediation process. So how have they not been told what these serious issues are? Think about this manager's reputation. And if these are not serious issues, like they're vaguely pointing at, well, that man has, it's absolute disgrace what's been done to that man. Yeah. If these are, which a lot of people are saying, and I don't want to go on with rumours because nobody knows, it's very hard to get to the bottom of this, but if this is a man management issue, right, and this is a player's nose being out of joint over maybe the manager hasn't dealt with situations well, maybe he has been a bit abrupt with them, maybe he hasn't picked one or two players and they've been unhappy about it, they're not player welfare issues. They're man management issues. I don't like his management style. That's a completely different thing to player welfare issues that are personal and that is a safe environment. Like, I mean, what's going on here?
What they're not saying is actually, you know, silence is speaking more volumes than what they would actually say if they reveal the player welfare issues. Like, the unsafe and unhealthy, I was like, whoa, I didn't know it was that bad. Like, because that's hinting at something major here. And as you said, it's a, what's Peter Leahy thinking? You know, these sorts of kind of rumours swirling around. But like, the perception is like of Carnacon at the moment, whether they like it or not, they were dismissed from the Mayo Championship. They were put back in. The Mayo LGFA felt strongly enough to appeal that decision again.
Yeah.
And then the remaining Mayo players came out and made a statement to say that they're not aware of these player welfare issues at all. And while
Cora, that's the huge thing for me. Yeah, well, it's their teammates.
And while Cora might say that, like, that. Oh, they mightn't be aware of what happened. That surprised me, because how could you not be? If these are serious enough for you to want to leave the panel in the first place, how could so many of the squad not actually be aware of them?
Yeah.
And like, maybe she has good reasons, but like, until they reveal them, we're going to keep asking questions like this, and it just makes the whole thing messy.
And I even don't like, if they're trying to say we don't want to disrupt things by revealing them, like, there is massive disruption. It's 10 times worse.
Bigger disruption.
How bad can this be? That it's worse than your whole county being on the women's side being in turmoil, your county board voting you out, your club appealing it. This is all the while the Mayo senior women's football team are trying to concentrate on the championship. Mm. You can't get any more disruptive than this.
Yeah. This is way bigger than what it would have been. I mean, this Mayo, this all happened ages ago. Was it July? Like, you know, so this would have been dealt with either way back then, like, no matter what the outcome was, and it would have been done. We would have heard the last of it. Now, she was saying on Off the Ball that she got plenty of opportunities to say what it was, but said they wanted to maintain their dignity and not, you know, go through the media. But
they're not maintaining dignity. This is the opposite of maintaining dignity.
And then, like, they're not helping themselves either, because the Mayo LGFA have appealed back to Connacht.
Yeah.
After they wanted to chat to delegates from Carnacon and a player who had left the panel, so they arranged this meeting, and Carnacon decided that they weren't going to go because they didn't feel it was fair.
Three members of the executive, I think, are aware of the player welfare issues that they won't speak about in public. I'm pretty sure the Cora said that as well.
Right.
So that there are members of the Mayo LGFA executive aware of. Now, I think they could only reveal so much to the county board delegates because of the mediation process and because of the confidentiality agreement.
Yeah.
But there definitely are people in Mayo LGFA aware of the issues, and yet still there has been appeal lodged to get rid of them from the championship again after the Connacht Council reinstated.
They're getting no support at county board level, and a lot of people saying, oh, they're so successful, that's why, you know, they want them out. But there's only 8 senior ladies teams, so they're the rivals. And let's be honest, there's not really much of a rivalry because Carnacon win it any year anyways. So we're looking at 30 votes to like 3. Like, and so there's 8 senior teams, depending on the delegates and everything. There's a lot of delegates here who have no direct rivalry with Carnacon who are voting this way. Now, I don't want to be the one to defend county board delegates over players. It never happened in my life. But if there was there's a split in these players, and that's really what's confusing me. That's the big thing for me, is how can all these... And there's a clip here, actually, of when Mayo played Galway in the Connacht Championship when Cora came back. So we all know, and we criticised the manager Leahy for his treatment of Cora, that I thought when she came back from Australia, he made a point of saying, well, I didn't contact her. And I thought that was a mistake with the stature and standing of Cora, that a phone call would be nice, say, look, you're not around for the league final, you can't be in our plans, you're only back, but we want you back for the championship. Yeah. Anyways, I thought that was bad management, but that's all that is, bad management. So then you see a clip doing the round of Cora getting fouled for a free against Galway in the Connacht Championship, and Sarah Rowe running over to her to take the free. She had been the free taker, and Cora not giving her the ball, and a few words being exchanged between them, and Sarah just walking away, then Cora was taking the free. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, again, because they won't tell us, then it's just opening the door for speculation.
Yeah, absolutely. But Cora also mentioned that there were 14 players, or 14 people involved.
12 players,
12 players and 2 of the backroom team. But 3 of the players left for personal issues that aren't believed to be related to this incident.
Right.
There's one player that left, like Peter Leahy himself said, that she just didn't communicate. So you can't necessarily tie it into this situation.
Right.
One of the members of the backroom team is the father of Fiona McHale, who plays for Carnacon.
Yeah.
So
that's like, all linked.
You can't get away from the fact that this is a Carnacon thing as opposed to beyond.
It is. It's a Carnacon thing.
That's why it's in their interest to give us more information, you know, because at the moment, that's when you see how many clubs go against Carnacon in that vote in the Mayo County Board. It's hard to get away from the fact that everyone else seems to be in favour, or, you know, of removing Carnacon from the championship.
Yeah, and this could be serious stuff. Their club is not coming across well in this. Like, I mean, when you look at it, if this was a players getting the hump with a manager because they didn't like him, didn't like his style, which is perfectly understandable, and you can leave the panel for that, and I have no problem. Say, well, listen, we've no interest in that fella, he barks around the place, he's like he's a bit old fashioned, we don't like that. And I've no idea, Lee, he's young, he might not be like that. I'm just throwing this out there. No one would have an issue with that. But what I have an issue with is saying player welfare and using these kind of unsafe environments and all that, and none of your teammates defending you, and all the girls seem to be from the same club, and you're just wondering what the hell's going on. Do you know, it's just bizarre stuff, and they just need to say what it is, and then people can make their decisions. The county board can make the decisions on whether that's fair or not, and maybe it's gone too far that they can't roll back on these player welfare issues. Who knows? But the other one I wanted to move on to here, lads, is the last one, and it's an Offaly manager application form. So Michael Verney had this in the Independent, so he's obviously from Offaly. So, like, I mean, we talk about the Offaly County Board being a little bit amateur, but Jesus Christ, you have to jump through a fair old hoops to get this part of this happen. While I don't want to be one of these players like Ryan Giggs who thinks they can just stroll in and get it, just get any manager job. I'd kind of say, Jesus, this is a little bit of a step too far. So there's 35 step application process. It's broken into 6 categories: personal, training, club under 20s, research and analysis, and additional information. So under training, you have to give the dates for individual programmes and start of collective training, the balance between playing football and physical work, a training plan for the O'Byrne Cup, training plan for the league, and a number of players in the panel where needed. Now, in fairness, a lot of this is what managers would do anyways, do you know? So maybe you're just getting a head start on, you know, it's a lot of work obviously to do before you get. I would be more interested in what kind of football are we going to play next year? Like, I mean, that'd be an important thing for me. What I'd like to give them scenarios in a game, what would you do, or how would you set up against Dublin? They'd be questions I'd like to ask the manager rather than how many trainings will you do before, you know, like, I mean, so then The working relationship with the under 21 management also requires explanation, as does the details of how research analysis of Division 3 opponents is undertaken. So that's another one. Additional information, he says, catches the eye with a question: how can players get into Sigerson teams? As well as stating that the county board will decide physios and kit men, while strength and conditioning personnel will be supplied by the board. Physios, kit, I give him the kit man. Usually the kit man is salt of the earth fella who's been in the county board for years. That's grand. But physios, strength and conditional personnel, good luck.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're giving me some masseuse or some fella that's done a course that I like, I mean, that's too serious for me. So that's it. And then agreement is also to be reached on types of media interaction. While suspension from GAA activities by any member of the management team will mean an instant dismissal and suspension of duties during the process. So Stephen Wallace, obviously, that's the Stephen Wallace.
They had that all the time. They didn't just throw it in this year. No.
So that's a good one. So John Mahan, being the experienced manager that he has gone through this process, has agreed to not have his own physios, has agreed to have it not his own strength and conditioning, and I'm kind of a little bit surprised at that.
Yeah, don't like it. I think it's a very I don't know if cheeky is the right word from Offaly, but it's almost like the board are getting too involved here, and this like asking somebody what the balance is going to be between physical and football work, it's like, let me get my bloody panel together first. I don't know who needs what, and I don't know how we're going to be going. I don't know, like, you know, do we need to work on something a bit more? Like, is this going to be held over them then for the rest of the year? And what are you doing in the gym?
You did say such and such. Yeah, it's a lot of control there, isn't there?
It seems like a lot of way outs for them, maybe, just in case something goes badly, like it did last time. They can just sort of try and say, well, here, you didn't follow the terms of the agreement.
Yeah. You can see it's probably good intentions. You can see that hopefully they're making sure that there's not too much of a focus on one thing and that they play enough football. It is well intentioned and it's thorough. That's two compliments for the county board.
I didn't think it was that bad until, like, you're probably going to get asked 25 questions like that at a manager interview anyway. It's just when it's written on paper as in the 35 point application form, I was like, oh geez, that sounds a bit much. But that's it. It's like the agreement must be reached on all types of media interaction. I thought, do you not trust your manager enough to give an interview every now and again? And the big one was the physios, in essence. Like, the manager's relationship with a physio on an S&C team is massive. You can't just have them imposed on you. That's going to have a massive impact on your season. So to assume that a man, I'm surprised that John Mahan went for that, to be honest, if he did go for it. But to assume that a manager is going to be okay with that.
Another thing is, like, I mean, what's wrong with these questions? Like, how would you set up against Dublin? How would you deal with Dermot Connolly? What would you have done in that situation with Dear McConnell? You know what I mean? There's so many different scenarios that even happen in games. What would you have done in the Ulster final when Donegal got an early start? Do you know what I mean? Like, there are questions that a manager has to actually think on his feet and actually give good answers, and that's in-game situations, or where did you think such and such went wrong, and have a list of actual questions. See, I'd be more interested in the playing side. See all this stuff. Sure, an administrator, like, the manager probably won't really even deal with a lot of this stuff. He'll have somebody who deals with the logistics and the amount of trainings and contacting pitches and relationship with under 21. Like, I'd be a lot more interested, not concerned, I'd be more interested in what kind of a bloody manager is this lad? Do you know what I mean? You're still not really sure from all this. Is this lad really any good at the end of it all?
I'm just surprised. Like, you spoke well, Willie, about John Sugrue when he was your physio as well, and how he was a psychologist. Like, you know, like, that does seem very important.
I don't think he's a psychologist.
No, you said how he was like your psychologist.
Oh, yeah,
you
the physio.
And you can bitch and moan and, you know, get things off your chest. And now this guy is the bloody county manager. So that appointment is very important as well. But I would just love to see you going for an interview process.
Well, I don't know, I will be full on Ryan Giggs, but it'll be like, I can't pull out the titles like Ryan Giggs, so I'm kind of snookered in that one. I can't be the Ryan Giggs. I'm like, well, listen, I have a Leinster.
All Ireland minor. Leinster club players here.
Yeah, there you go. Ah, come on, we can keep listening. All right, yeah. So it was an interesting one, just to move off Offaly, that Offaly candidates Pascal Kellehan and Mark Plunkett. And former Offaly boss Gary Fahey, who had former Offaly boss Gary Fahey's party's backroom team, didn't even receive an interview. So I was amazed to read that in that piece there today, because Kellehan's highly rated, he's done well at club, he's been with Liam Kearns in Tipperary, and you imagine, like, he's the obvious choice if he wanted his own county, and he obviously did because he put his backroom team together. Didn't even get an interview.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, isn't it weird? It's the politics, and I was going to say that the politics with Carnicon, the politics of Mayo football,
make me sick.
And I know, I played it. That's why I walked away.
Just need to throw your slip on the ground there.
And that's the same. The politics of Offaly GAA make me sick. And I've played it. Pascal Callaghan has played it. And he walked away. It applies to literally every county in the whole of the country. Before we move on to Jarlath, lads, I just have to give a shout out to a Dunboyne over 40s tournament. It's an aid of Dunboyne ASD autism class. So it's happening this Saturday on the 8th. So get your team in and head to Dunboyne on Saturday morning before 11:30. There's barbecues and drinks in the clubhouse after, and there's a Legends match between 1990s Meath and Dublin teams. So it's a fundraiser for the autism class in Dunboyne. So a friend of mine asked me to give that a shout out.
Are you playing?
No, you see, I'm still a very high level 40-year-old.
He's like, back, did you hear?
How's the hammer?
I'm back.
Oh, back.
Oh, yeah, I'm back in the mix.
He's already got this
semi-finals on Saturday week. So now the anxiety of being on the team kicks in, because I've missed the last two games. So, like, I mean, and we're playing Cortwood, who would be a fairly strong intermediate team, but we're pretty strong now as well. Challenge game this Saturday, which I'm a banker to get injured in anyways. And
where are they playing you?
Well, I play corner forward the first game.
Oh, Cortwood have a great cornerback.
There was a young lad that played in the fullback line at the show in the Sugar Club the other night. We were doing a little bit of kind of friendly trash talking to each other.
I wasn't too friendly about you behind your back.
All right, we have to do Jarlath here, which is, we could have talked to him. Why didn't I bring that up a bit earlier? We might do an intermediate special if we win it. Right, we'll talk to Jarlath in a minute.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it didn't look great. Yeah, there was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, 100% reason to remember the name. All right, so Jarlath Burns joins us on the line now to talk about exactly what we talked about at the top of the show. So Jarlath's going to make a case for the level of funding from the GAA that Dublin have received since their strategic review, which Jarlath was a part of. Jarlath, so maybe we might start off by painting the picture back in the day. 2003, was it, when this strategic review started?
2002 is when it reported at a special congress in January of that year, yeah.
Right, okay, so...
Well, at that time, I was chairman of the first players committee. If you remember, whenever the GPA was set up and Sean McCaig was president then, and he made me chairman of the very first players committee. So I would have found myself around an awful lot of the strategic committees that were meeting at the time. I wasn't actually a member of that committee, but I really wanted to know what the work of it was, and I would have gone to an awful lot of their meetings because I was impressed by the whole concept of strategy, and that was something that was emerging in the GAA at the time. So I found myself hanging around the committee a lot and ended up being involved in the writing of the report. Now, I have the review in front of me, and I think people should read it just to see exactly where we were back in 2001. And what you need to remember is this. 2001, it was six years since Dublin had won in All-Ireland. And the previous one before that was 1983. And the one before that, I think, was 1978. So it's not as if they were dominant or anything like that. They were far from it. Somebody who met us, I remember him commenting on that, and he said that the day before the All-Ireland final in 1985, you could have walked down O'Connell Street, the main street of the capital city of our country, and you would not have known that there was even a match going to take place, never mind that this county was going to be participating in an All-Ireland final. And that was reflected very much in the report when it came out. Now, on page 170, which I have in front of me, I'm just going to read out a bit of this paragraph, which for me is chilling. Now, this is only, 16 years ago. It's very, very short time ago. And Armagh won the All-Ireland in 2002. It seems like yesterday. So this isn't going back 100 years. It's only a few years ago. Since the last 5 years, I've seen rapid growth in the number of people living in the Greater Dublin area. So it goes on talking about what the population is going to be. Recent research has indicated that fewer and fewer of these children are choosing Gaelic games as a preferred activity. The situation situation is further compounded by the fact that the main competitor organisations in the sporting arena are investing significant amounts of money in marketing their games aggressively, including in areas and in schools where previously the GAA was the dominant entity in sporting terms. Now, what they were saying there was that the GAA was declining rapidly in Dublin at that stage. I remember Peter Quinn's report to the Special Congress. He said there are vast tracts of inner city Dublin, working class Dublin, and in South Dublin, where the people don't even know that the GAA exists, never mind playing it. Now, that was borne out a few years later whenever we relaxed Rule 42, and the IRFU actually had to issue directions for people from South Dublin to get to Croke Park. So that was borne out by that. The second, and that's fact, what happened. Just the second point, and I'm only going to make 2 points from this, but it's a really, really interesting chapter on Dublin. It says, and just contrast this to where Dublin are at the moment. Despite the county's population, the GAA in Dublin is not as wealthy as the committees of several other counties. The resulting lack of resources means that the focus of the committee's attention is primarily on day-to-day administrative matters. So really at that stage, Dublin, and it was seen as everybody's responsibility that the GAA should be strong and vibrant in our capital city, was on a terminal decline. So what they did was,
Sorry, Gerald, I'll just let you know, and I accept the findings of the report, but it'd be interesting to know that if people didn't know if the GAA existed, did they know any sport existed? But because the Dublin had won the Leinster Minor Football Championship in 99, 2001, 2003, they lost an All-Ireland Minor final in 02 and 03, and won an Under-21 All-Ireland in 02, lost the final in 03. They'd gone 6 years without winning Leinster. Like, I mean, this was not... Like, I don't know why this is just panic stations for Dublin and why they need this leg up. Laois football isn't going well. There's lots of counties of football isn't going well. And then the governing body is not helping them. Is not giving them all this money. You know, like, I mean, I don't see Dublin having been that basket case. They had a good senior football team. They were beaten by great teams like Kildare and Meath, who were winning All-Irelands. Kildare got the finals. Like, I mean, was this absolutely necessary to help Dublin? Were they in a situation, brilliant teams with Alan Brogans, Barry Cowles, Brian Cullens all coming through, and yet the governing body, not just the Dublin County Board, the governing body is pumping money into them.
Well, if you look at that concept of pumping money in, and I hear what you're saying, and you're making a very good point, but I'll address that in a moment. Remember what the GAA's coaching and games strategy is, what the ethos is. It is not anything to do with producing elite performance. That comes later on at the academy, which counties themselves have to fund. What it is it's participation, underlined by this statement. We want people to play and stay with the GAA. So as ever young people reach adulthood and someone says, do you know the GAA exists and have you ever played it? They can say, well, I did play it. I played a wee bit of it in school. And that's really what it is. It's all to do with fun and development. The coaches that were funded to go into schools at that stage as a result of the strategic review were games promotion officers. Now, my brother is one in Armagh here, Fintan, and he will tell you that the brief when you go into a school and you have 30 children in front of you, you could have 23 of them who are not interested and who will just play for the hour and have a bit of fun, and you might never teach them how to actually hit a slipper off a hurley. But that goes in with the GAA's concept of what coaching is at that level. Participation, fun. And this is, I think this is really where we can all learn from what happened. In an awful lot of coaching, and I hear this in our county board all the time, coaches go into schools and there's no link between the school and the club. What the GAA did, along with the transitional committee, which arose from the strategic review column, was they linked each club with a coach and a school.
Yeah.
So you can say to the child in the school, you're quite good if you get a club, and invariably it will be no. Now, in my club, I know every single child of school going age. I know their family, I know everything about them, and we have to get them into our club if we want the next generation to survive. In Dublin, it's different, and sometimes the worst thing you can have is a big, big population. So the coach would say, why don't you come down to the club on Tuesday and I'll introduce you to some people and we'll get you in. That was the key factor, I think, that led to the success, because that created the bridge away from fun and into development. Now, you make a very good point here, Colm. Why was all of this money put into Dublin? You know, well, I would respond to that by saying any area where the GAA sees that there is a need, if they see that there is a will, they will invest in it. For example, if you look at the Leinster Council, recently they have embarked on what they call the East Leinster Project. Now, John Horan, our current president, was very involved in this, and he's a Dublin man. I think he's a man of great vision, John Horan.
Yeah, that East Leinster Project, though, Gerald, it's coming 15 years after this Dublin thing. The monster has been created now, and the money that's been put into that East Leinster Project, it's just pittance. It's just throwing, like, it's not going to fix the imbalance in Leinster. Like, I mean, this issue has been created by the GAA. I don't want, I've talked to John Horan about this East Leinster project. Like, this is going to be some sort of same. Why was this East Leinster project not done at the same time as this Dublin project? Why was one county prioritised over others? And, like, I mean, the cynical GAA supporters will say it's because of the potential Dublin support, and the GAA were afraid of losing that income from full Croke Park.
Well, back then, like, I played. Yeah, that could very well be the case, because, you know, we don't make any excuses for saying that 52% of our income come from gate receipts. And if you don't have gate receipts, well, you don't have a coaching and games budget. Coaching and games budget is the 25% of the GAA's income. We don't have things like international TV rights that other sports have. So we have to try and maximise our attendance. Maybe that is the case, but I mean, Peter Quinn was the chair of that. Peter Quinn is very much a traditionalist, and Peter Quinn and people at that time could see, if we don't have a strong presence in the capital city of our country, well, how relevant are we going to be? Because that's where the population is going to be. And remember,
but you see, Charlotte, you did have a strong, like, I mean, you look at it, and we talk about, I've mentioned this at the start of the show. So, playing numbers and population, Dublin is just at 2.91% of playing numbers from their population. But if you were to bring that up to other counties, like, obviously a downside of living in a big city is that there is rugby, there is soccer, and there's other distractions. We have the same issue in Portlaoise in comparison to a rural club where GAA is all that matters. Like, they're the downsides, the disadvantages of being in a big city. But if all these games development officers, there's 90 in Dublin, Charlotte, there's 89 in the rest of Leinster. So if those numbers if those percentage playing numbers come up, Dublin playing numbers are already dwarf other counties. But if that percentage, you're bringing it up it's going to come up in line with Dublin having the numbers of a province.
Which they probably have now, maybe even more than a lot of provinces. And I'm not arguing with what you're saying, because there is an imbalance. I think even at the highest level of Croke Park, they would say, yeah, there is an imbalance. And this has, the problem is that the objectives that they set out to achieve in 2002 have been overachieved. You know, I still think, and I know you'll debate this with me, that we haven't done a proper analysis as to where the current team have come from, how much they have benefited from the GPO money that has gone in. And if you look at, for example, you know, McCaffrey's, the Brogans, the Dean Rocks, you know, let's say Cormac Costello, all of those people, they all, like, I remember watching their father playing football. You could argue that those boys would have come through anyway. Yeah. But this brings me to the second point, and it's to do with the specific funding that Dublin themselves have created for themselves to run their elite outfit. There's a difference, I think, between the GAA money centrally funded, which goes in to try and increase participation at schools level, most of which a lot of people would say is wasted, because those children don't go on and play Gaelic games.
Yeah, well, it's not wasted because they're linked to the clubs, right? So even if that some of that money is wasted, the work that they're doing with the clubs, that's like per registered player. That's still, you know what I mean, that's still bearing fruit, that organisation and that coaching in the club, because these games development officers are doubling up. So, okay, during the week, they might not be getting much return when they go into the schools, but they're still doing work in the clubs, and they're already registered members.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, and that's what I said at the start. And, you know, that has been the success of this Dublin project, where the coach is linked to the school and can take the child in school. Now, instead of, you know, beating our chest over this and saying this is terrible, we can't undo what is good practice. What we do is, you know, and I've spoken to people at the highest level of the association about this recently, and what they're saying is that if any other county comes to Croke Park with a plan to say, right, this is our strategic plan.
Can I stop you there?
Okay.
No, I'll have to stop you there. Because why does another county, we're talking about amateur volunteers here. So Dublin County Board came looking for money, a strategic review, which Croke Park initiated and organised. They came up with ideas for Dublin. So why is it up to other counties who clearly are not don't have the expertise? Why did Croke Park, the GEA, have to help Dublin and give them a strategic plan? But you turn around and you say other counties have to come and catch up. What if they don't have the expertise to do that? Why is Croke Park not coming up with strategies for these counties?
Well, you could argue that the East Leinster project was one of those.
East Leinster project. Sure, it's pittance, Colin, what's been given to that.
Hold on. Colin, it's better than nothing. Right?
Yeah, it is.
And
I remember, it's not going to turn the table.
Eight years ago, Armagh County decided that we were going to completely revamp how we did hurling in our county. And very visionary fellow called Paul Kelly, and he's actually still with the county senior team now. Great respect for him. He took over the hurling in the county, and he came up with a strategic plan. And he went to Christy Cooney, looked at GA management. We got €500,000 for it over 3 years, and it really, really did help our county. And we have been benefiting from it ever since. Now, I'm not here to justify. I have admitted there is definitely an imbalance. There's no doubt about it. But what I'm saying is that what has ended up being a key bit of good practice and that has succeeded, let's not decry it. Let's say this has worked well in our capital city, because the first thing I think that we disagree on is that I believe it is very important that the GA is strong and vibrant and relevant in our capital city. And if you
That's a Dublin County Board problem. It's not a GEA problem. It's a Dublin County Board problem. Just like you're saying, all the other counties need to come with their plans or whatever. This is not a GEA problem. Why is Dublin so important if it's not outside revenue? Why are they prioritising Dublin? Why is Dublin for me is just another county of 32 that take part in the All Ireland? But for the GEA, it seems to be so much more important than all the rest.
I'll tell you why it's important, because at the time that the strategic review was written, we were losing massive amount of potential throughout the city because of the amount of, as it says in the strategic review, aggressive marketing that was being done by other sports. And there is only so much decline you can take before you say, right, we have to stop it.
Yeah.
You know,
Throw that money and come up with that review for Dublin and not the other counties in the country is just incompetence. Because now they've won 13 of 14 Leinsters. So Leinster's a joke. Leinster Championship shouldn't even happen. Like, I mean, the average winning margin was 20 points in Leinster. So now they've won 6 of 8 All-Irelands. They've won 4 or 5 or 5 of 6 National Leagues. Was that the height of incompetence for the GEA to watch Dublin? And there's the work that was Dublin is being done in Dublin is absolutely great. Sure, no one can deny that. And I'll no problem with increasing the playing numbers and everything like that. Don't want people falling away. We want to compete with other sports. But to target just Dublin based on all the advantages they have while completely and come up with an East Leinster project 12 years later. This is as a management point of view, though, Jarlett. Like, I mean, I'm not blaming you because you're not making those decisions. But this is it. This is the height of incompetence.
And probably if the GAA had done nothing at all, there would be other people saying, look, the GAA has died in the capital city of Ireland.
No, but I think the decision to help Dublin wasn't a bad one, because if I heard about it at the time, I wouldn't have had the same issues. This all came to light years later. But to do it with Dublin and to not have that kind of cop on to realise, geez, if we make a superpower out of these and all the other counties are getting none of this strategic help, that this could actually lead to a complete domination. Would that not be said in that meeting, though? I can't understand how that wouldn't even be, like, would that not be part of the discussion? What if we create a monster here?
Yeah, well, I'm sure it was, but at the time, there was no way that it could have been predicted that Dublin was going to be coming into the force that they have been.
Hold on a second.
Because the whole concept behind this was to increase participation, not to create an elite model, which is what Dublin County Board themselves have done. And a study has yet to be done which links the games promotion officers and the work that they did with the clubs with the current Dublin senior team. I'll tell you where it definitely can be linked.
John, hang on, sorry.
I can definitely be linked to the fantastic success of the rise of hurling in Dublin. And if you look at, you have a situation where in South Dublin now, the main sport is not rugby, it's now hurling. And Cruella have won two All-Irelands in a row. And I think that is something that the GAA should be proud of. And you're going to say, why should they be proud of that? It's only Dublin. They're no different to any other county in Ireland. And we just have to agree to differ on that. I personally think, I mean, I'm from the six counties. I mean, we're in a complete backwater when it comes to funding and all of that sort of thing. But I there's a valid perspective, Colin, which states that if you really care about the GAA, that we believe that our association should be strong and vibrant and dynamic in our capital city.
Yeah.
Now, the natural outworking of that could not be foreseen, and this is what happened. That cycle will end.
It could be foreseen. It could be foreseen.
Between 1950, in the 1950s and 60s, Cavan won 18 out of the 20 Ulster titles, and they had better resources, better finance than everybody else. And I'm sure people at that time might have thought, we'll deal with all of the whole provincial structure because Cavan are just walking away with it every year. But that cycle changed.
No, Charlie, stop.
And Cavan didn't want to hear that.
It changed organically. And like I said at the start of the show, I've no problem as much with Dublin earning loads in commercial revenue. They earn 1.5 million, close enough, in and around that, in commercial revenue in 2017. Like, there's nothing really... That's their good luck. But why is the GAA giving them, and they gave them last year 1.3 million in games development still, Charlotte, in 2017. Yeah. Now, it was a drop of 165,000 on 2016. So they're going to slowly but surely fill it. Dublin are self-sufficient based on the commercial revenue, and that's going to grow every year because they have a full-time marketing department. They've spent in 2016 523,954 on office salaries. Like, I mean, to say for Leisure and another county to look at that, like, you'd have a heart attack. And the GAA is still giving them games development money. Like, at what point is this going to stop? And at what point in 2010, 2011, 2012, when we saw the Jack McCaffrey age group coming up, when we saw that 2014 under 21 team, the 2011 minors with absolute superstars on it, at what point does the GAA say, geez, well, Dublin now have really got their house in order? They have a full-time CEO, a marketing department, they're earning 1.5 million in commercial revenue every year themselves. That's only going to grow as they get better. At what point was the GAA say, maybe they don't need that games development, maybe instead of this East Leinster project and throwing maybe 500,000 at it over 5 years, I don't know the exact figures, would they not say, we'll take that 1.2 million and we'll put it into Meath and Kildare and at least ensure we have a Leinster championship, put it into Leash. They're not doing that. Now they're just going to filter this out over the next 10 years so that maybe this game's development of 1.3 million in 10 years' time might be 300,000. But you're like, I mean, it's too late then.
Listen, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I think that the funding to Dublin has to end. But you can't just pull the rug under something that is working for them and working for the children in Dublin because they are getting an opportunity to play Gaelic games. And in order for you to give the same opportunity to a child in sixth class in, let's say, Ballymun, as you're given to a child in Port Leisha, if you want to give the same amount of time playing Gaelic games to that child in school, you're going to have to continue making that expenditure. The big link here is where the half of the coach's time is devoted to his club, but the club is paying for that.
And half I think of it, if you half were going of it. To, club pays for half of it.
Yeah, half of it, and the GAA pays for the half that goes on in the school, which is non-registered players, the 30 children, 23 of whom probably will never play Gaelic games or become involved in the club. We all know that. Now, you know, and whenever we meet in Armagh County Board meetings, we would hear that all the time, that we need to get the GPOs into the clubs. And Dublin have managed to do that. But I would always say, what the first thing that clubs could do is stop paying a senior manager and say, see the money that we're going to, see that 15 or 20,000 that we give a manager at the very top. I'm talking about a club level here, trying to quick fix something that we can't fix at that level and to improve another issue. Why not get a GPO to work half and half in the school, or come up with a system in our own county board where we will pay half, and if the county board pays half, if Cook pays half, and it means then that we have a coach working in our club. It's a club level that we need to fix this problem, starting off with. There's an awful lot of clubs will pay £20,000 or £30,000, think nothing about it, of an outside man. But in fact, that money could be going in at the grassroots, at the underage. So that's, I think that's the first lesson we learned. But I'm not disagreeing with you, Colin, that that funding needs to stop. And that was actually said by John Horne in his final report as Leinster chairman last year, when he said, and I quote, you know, there's been a large amount of comment in relation to the different standards in counties, and alluded last year to the need for equalisation of funding to be given to these counties who find it hard to raise capital. I feel this matter needs addressing, as a lot of energy is expended in these counties struggling to manage their finances and distracting away from the main purpose of this organisation, promoting games. Taking money away from counties would be divisive, but allocating funds from new revenue streams, etc., etc., would be a great help. So,
yeah,
President
sure.
GAA, and who's from
fair.
Dublin,
yeah.
acknowledges
yeah.
that. As does the Archdeacon,
and
that will happen. But it would be bad practice now at yeah. this stage just to come in and stop it all.
Under John Horan's chairmanship, he didn't start this payment, but so we have the $5 million Dublin got from the government. That was Bertie Ahern. That was John Bailey going to Bertie Ahern saying we need this money. So they got $1 million a year for 5 years. Now John Bailey spent that money on coaches and development squads. So, like, I mean, that's not GAA sure. money, but the GAA surely saw what John Bailey was doing here and what they were getting off the government, but continue to increase their games development to Dublin. Like, I mean, it's just, for me, it's just, it makes absolutely no sense. Like, I just can't make sense of it.
Yeah.
Go on.
Colm, I'm not going to comment on specific deals that were done between politicians in the...
Yeah, no, but it needs to be pointed out that they got $5 million from the government on top of this, and that was, like, they set up these development squads pretty much with that money. But wait, I'll tell you this, because just before we finish up, we're going to have to talk about what the solution is. John Horan, the Leinster Council, on top of that $5 million, on top of the obscene games development money Dublin were getting, which was disproportionate, the Leinster Council were giving him $240,000 in coaching development payment. Now, I questioned John Horne about that, and they're saying he's phasing that out. So these, like, to think the money that was thrown at Dublin, it's just, and I don't really want to talk about how it's linked to the current team, because it's hard to prove. I take your point. There's so many holes in that argument. I do take your point on Dean Rock, James McCarthy, Bernard Brogan, all Jack McCaffrey. These lads are from traditional GAA families and would have come along. Kieran Kilkenny would have come along anyway. Also, Dublin are a huge county. The 2014 under-21 team has given them about 7 players. Fenton's, John Smalls, McCaffrey's, Kilkenny's.
Mm-hmm.
An obscene
mm-hmm.
amount
yeah.
of players. So this golden generation could have come along anyway, but that's not important to me. What's important is that Dublin were prioritised over other counties. That's my problem. And huge amount of money was given mm-hmm. to them. And with that money now, they've the marketing department, the full-time CEO, the $1.5 million commercial revenue, and they're still getting GAA money. That's my problem.
Yeah.
I want to mention something Andy Kettle said in 2011 at the launch of the Blue Wave. So this was a strategy.
That was an excellent strategy document.
Yeah, it was an excellent strategy document, but it's very interesting what he said. So he says, this is him trying to make a case for more GAA funding.
Yeah.
Like, if you can get your head around that. So from a financial point of view, we do need to be pushing for provincial status. Right now, we have about 20% of the country's population in the Dublin County Board area. So it doesn't make sense that we should be considered 1/32nd of the country rather than 1/5.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, let's follow this through. So we know Dublin playing percentage numbers are at 2.91. So they're a little bit behind Munster, which is 7.53. Ulster in the nationalist community is 7.76, 8.16 in uh-huh. Connacht and 8.6 in Leinster. If all these games development officers continue on their good work, there are 90 of them in one county, 89 in the rest of Leinster, but 90 in Dublin. If they continue on this good work, you add to this the population of Dublin, which is expected to grow exponentially in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
You add all this together, right? Dublin will have the population of a province. They will get towards the playing percentage of a province, which will probably, you know, be huge numbers. They have the commercial revenue of a province. They've been getting GAA funding of a province. In 20 years' time, hopefully that will have filtered out. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
They field one team. Leinster fields 11 other teams. Well, 10, because Kilkenny have no football
yeah.
team.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, I mean, if you were to follow this true, the only explanation and the only solution to this, if everything continues the way it's going, is for Dublin to be split into two, is to be split into at least four.
Yeah. And funny, it's Mark Conway, who was very much a part of the strategic review, has said that and was surprised at the time that Dublin didn't agree to split into two, North and South Liffey, at the time. And I think that's probably a long-term solution, I might very well. But the impetus from that has to come from within Dublin. It can't be imposed in Dublin. And
it'll never come then, though, will it? Like, I mean,
you don't know, because I'll tell you why. There's an awful lot of really, really good players in Dublin who never play for Dublin because of the standard that's there.
Yeah.
You know, and I would hate to be, you know, the father of a really good player, and he knows that if he lived in Leash, if he lived in Kildare, he'd be playing midfield, and he can't. I mean, what a player Brian Fenton is, and what chance are you ever going to have? I mean, if Michael Darren McCall, he can't even make that team. So there are disadvantages with it, but with being this massive part of a country. But just one little thing I would say is, and I don't disagree with anything you say, I think you're making very good points here. If the money was put into Dublin Archie Games most equally into hurling and football, but yet they're still not dominating hurling. If we are going to use that argument,
that's such a basic argument, though, Jarlett. Like, I mean, Coola have won an All Ireland club. Dublin have won a Leinster hurling. Before that funding started, Dublin were losing to Westmeath and Laois, like on a regular basis. They were at that level. Now they won a Leinster under and a league, beat the great Kilkenny team in 2011. Like, to say that Dublin, you could actually argue coming from the low base that the hurlers have improved even more than the footballers. Like, I think that's such a cheap argument to come up with. Why haven't the hurlers won an All Ireland?
Well, it's not really, because you would have expected that they would have Here's what I'm saying. It can't all be linked to funding. There have to be people on the ground who are prepared to do the work, the volunteer hard work.
So the money added to good volunteers and expertise at senior level equals All Ireland when it comes to, like, Ger Cunningham was a disaster for the 3 years. You could argue Anthony Cunningham was building towards an All Ireland success. They've had 3 years where they took a backward step, and now under Gilroy they've took a forward step. Would you argue against Dublin winning an All Ireland in the next 5 years in hurling? I wouldn't.
No, I'd love to see it.
I wouldn't mind seeing it.
I have no problem with the hurling, but
you're come to the same argument that it was bought. Like, it was, they were targeted over Laois and Westmeath and Offaly. Offaly hurling, a great traditional county. Why don't Offaly hurling have the GAA do a strategic review instead of the Offaly County Board doing it and it being ignored? Why don't the GAA do a strategic review for Offaly hurling and let's see Offaly back? They don't do it. Because why? Because Offaly can't fill Croke Park.
And Colm, the only one point that me and you're going to disagree on in this entire argument is that I believe that it is important for us in 6 years the GAA is strong in Dublin, and that it is worth investing in that. I believe that.
Your belief has us in the situation that we're in, Jarlett. Let's call a spade here. Your belief that it should be strong in the capital has us now in a domination, has the Leinster Championship 13 out of 14 for Dublin, has the All-Ireland 6 out of 8, and has the League 5 out of 6. That's where your belief has us. So is that the right belief to have if you're a GAA man with 32 counties in Ireland?
Without a proper study being done on the link between that funding which went into schools and non-registered players and the Dublin success, I don't think we can say that as definite. I think we have to be honest. And just one last point I would make. Right. Coaching in games is not the only funding stream that exists within the GAA. For example, if you look at Party Cleeve Cork last year, got 20 million from Croke Park. If you look at, for example, the Bahi and Crone, I think it's 1.2 million they got. Antrim, the GAA is about to spend 15 million in Antrim to upgrade Casement Park. And last year in London, we spent 3.5 million doing our price list. So there are more funding streams than coaching and games in the GAA.
Oh, yeah.
The Centres of Excellence, for example, I think is in Leash and Offaly, have got, I don't have the actual figures, but they've got quite a lot of money as well from the GAA and will continue to do so. And they're entitled to it. Dublin doesn't get any of that money. Because let's say if my club was going to buy a new field, we could put aside 300,000 would buy a new field for my club.
See, Dublin get that money because they use the National Stadium as their home ground, which is another farce.
I agree with you, but if I was a club in Dublin and we need to buy a new field, and there's an awful lot of clubs in Dublin need to do that and would love to be able to expand, we're talking 30 million 30 million wouldn't look at it. So we're glad that we don't have to spend that money on developing fields and facilities and infrastructure for clubs in Dublin, because if we did, we wouldn't be able to afford it. And with regard to Croke Park, yeah, I think I played once in my career, at the very, very start of my career, 1981 or two, I think. I remember it was Martin Given Bulger, I think was his name, whenever we played Dublin and Croke Park in the league. From then on, we played them in Parnell Park. Now, from a GAA perspective, I'm a solid arm high man and I want arm high to win. I enjoy Dublin, the fact, and I'm glad that there's enough people who want to watch Dublin that they need Croke Park and not Parnell Park anymore. It would be the same if Leash got to that level that they needed it. Whenever the rivalry between Armagh and Clone was so strong that Clonus wouldn't hold the ground, they had to go to Croke Park. From a GAA perspective, that was good. And there are times when we just have to say, this is good for the GAA. Now, I agree that Dublin, I don't want to see Dublin winning All Ireland after All Ireland. I don't want to see that. It's not good for the association. I know that. But I want the GAA to be strong in Dublin, and I don't want to see any decline. And back in 2002, when we were meeting and we were talking about this, talking about Dublin, I can tell you there was a doom and gloom in the room that if we were going to lose Dublin, where were we going for? The main part, central population is going to be, we were going to be in a bad situation in the GAA.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't think we'll agree.
We're not going to agree on that.
Probably won't agree on that because I prefer to look at the 32 counties. But I have to say, Jarlett, fair play to you for coming on and taking the GAA side. It's hard to get GAA people in Croke Park to come onto the show, but considering that John Horan came in and you're no longer part of any of the committees that you used to be, it takes a bigger man to come on and actually take their side. You're not a bitter man, obviously, Jarlett.
No, I actually think John's a really decent guy, and I think he's doing a great job, and I have an awful lot of respect for him, I have to say. John came in, I have been part of committees since I retired, actually, the Players Committee, National Score Committee, you name it, I've been on it, but John Horan has a very, very strong mandate, and, he has a right to pick new people, and maybe it was time to get rid of people like me and bring in new people. I'm delighted, the fellow who's taken over from me is David Hassan from Derry, chairman of the Standing Committee of Players. He's a brilliant guy, and I'm very excited to see what he's going to do. So, no, it's not about individuals, it's about what's best for the association at a particular time, and I couldn't point to one committee chair that John Horan has picked and say, yeah, I could do a better job than that, and it's great to see new blood in the association. No, I have a lot of respect for
John. Do you think throwing your name into the hat for the presidency had any bearing on maybe him coming in and freezing you out?
I honestly don't know the answer to that. I doubt if he would have even considered that, or if he would even know that I'm considering standing for the presidency the next time. Whenever you become president, you sit down, you look at who you have around you and who you can trust and who you know. John doesn't really know me.
Right.
I've never really had that many dealings with him. So I'd imagine he just decided, I'll go for such and such because I know him and I've worked with him and that's it. I don't subscribe to conspiracy theories and I don't, I'm not better. And I'm secretary of my club and, I'm not going down to Dublin all the time. I just love hanging around the club every evening and making a nuisance of myself, and that does for me for the time being. It fairly grounds you.
Yeah, okay, Jarlett, thanks very much for coming on the show as usual. Great stuff from Jarlett there, as usual. All right, we'll be back on Monday with a show again. We're Monday and Thursday combined shows from now until Christmas. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.